Part 3. Counterattack. Chapter 1. Bastion 8. 17th Army Headquarters, Mairac Riverfront. There were few places on Cadia still under the direct control of Cadian High Command. Bastion 8 on the Mairac Riverfront was one such. It was still resisting, even though half of the 17th Army Group were pinned down in the Mairac salient, in danger of being cut off. For 3 weeks, the neck of the salient had been drawing closed, like a noose. Now it seemed to the fighters on this front that the moment of decision had come. The man who had led the defence of this front was General Gruber. He was the kind of commander who built his name on the bones of his soldiers. He would spend the life of every guardsman under him if he got him further up the command chain. He had held his front with a mixture of discipline, bloody-mindedness, and a stubborn lack of imagination. Gruber's strategy was simple. Defence in depth, and, for him, that meant 30 miles of minefields, artillery kill zones, anti-tank strong points, and trench upon trench, supported by hundreds of heavy weapon emplacements. For months, heretic assaults had stalled within this mire. The foremost units had lapped up against the martyr walls of Bastion 8, then flagged and stalled, and had been thrown back. His bloody-mindedness had stood him in good stead in his 150-year career with the Imperial Guard, but this was not necessarily a quality that allowed him to perform the task he now knew he had to achieve, which was to mount a dazzling series of attacks. But Creed had issued his orders, and Gruber had to obey. Now he stood in the command bunker and stared down from the raised dais, his aquila-tipped cane of office tucked neatly under his arm. There was a strained silence as the brigade commanders filed in. His units had been defending and retreating for so long, they had a numb, beaten air to them. Gruber knew he had to pull off the speech of his life. He had no idea where he was going to start. He waited for the doors to be closed before putting his hand to his mouth and effecting a brief cough. There was silence as he stepped forward, his smartly polished boots clip-clipping on the wooden planks of the dais.
"Fellow warriors," he announced, "the time we have been waiting for has come."
His words were met with a dull silence. Gruber paused, the metal fan shutter of his augmetic lens whining as it focused on prominent faces about the room. He felt he needed to say more.
"We have faced an assault from earth and sky. We have faced the wrath of the archenemy, and we are still alive. We are still fighting. That is a victory in itself."
He took a pace forward.
"We still have faith."
Silence again, the general noted, though he could tell that they were warming up a little. He took another pace to the side, clipped his heels together, removed the staff of office from under his arm, rested the silver aquila in his palm and paused, looking down at the faces of his commanders. He had the odd sensation, not for the first time, that his men were looking for something that he did not possess. Creed was the problem. The young upstart had, in the short time that he had been Lord Castellan of Cadia, changed the way that Cadians expected to be led. Being authoritative, being professional, being stern, these things were no longer enough. Cadians wanted a commander to inspire them now. And Maximus Octavian Gruber III had never, ever, in his entire 180 years of life, been accused of being an inspirational leader. He reflected on this for a moment as he stood, staring down.
"We shall rock the enemy back. We shall hit them so hard that their teeth rattle," he said,
shaking the aquila in the air, copying a painting he had once seen of Macarius. But even when he quoted Creed's own words, he did not seem to have the knack of delivery that Creed most clearly had. This was a sadness that Gruber had been struggling with in the past 100 days, when everything he had known, the solid ground that he had placed his booted feet upon, had proved transitory, ephemeral, uneven. His long career had been based on assumptions that were no longer relevant. And a young orphan upstart named Ursaka E. Creed had risen to the height of military power. Gruber stiffened and drew himself up a little higher. He took in a deep breath.
"This morning, I spoke to Lord Castellan Creed."
Just the mention of Creed's name was like a magic charm that summoned his spirit. In an instant, he felt the mood of the room change. Officers whose shoulders had started to slump from exhaustion or boredom or general war weariness, ground down by death, lack of supplies, the constant pummeling from the enemy, sat a little straighter, their shoulders thrown back, their chins lifted high, eyes bright with hope and expectation. The change rippled down the room. Gruber found, much to his own chagrin, that even he was standing a little straighter, if that was at all possible. He found strange emotions rising within him. He pursed his lips for a moment, then took another step to the centre of the stage. He repeated Creed's name and changed the sentence to put himself at its core.
Lord Castellan Creed called me this morning and asked me how your spirits were. I told him that you were eager to assault, that you were desperate to take the war back to the enemy. I told him, men of the 17th Army, that you were ready to begin the long-awaited counterattack.
He could see their attention beginning to wane and knew he had to return to Creed again.
The Lord Castellan commanded us all, to launch attacks upon the enemy.
There was a ragged cheer that started at the back of the room and rippled forward.
Today is that day, he declared,
and put his hand out for silence.
Creed wanted me to relay his own words to you. His very own words.
He paused as he looked down at the paper in his hand and began to read.
The future of Cadia hangs in the balance. We are to make war upon the enemy, to bring destruction and death to each and every one of them. I am to lead the 17th Army to the Elysian Fields.
He paused, his last words drowned out as the officers in the room all leaped to their feet. The fight back had begun. Bastion 8 lay 130 miles from the first pylons of the Elysian Fields. In that gap, there were at least 7 armies of the enemy. And yet Creed had demanded that he reach the Elysian Fields within 3 days.
Get there with all haste, Creed had told him.
Gruber liked to fight in a plodding, ponderous, unstoppable manner, typical of generals of the Astra Militarum.
I cannot get there within a month.
I need you there in 2 days. 2 days, Gruber. Understand? 2 days. That is an order.
I understand, Gruber had said, even though he knew that with the troops he had, the supplies that they did not have, and the strength of the enemy before them, there was no way that they could fulfill Creed's wishes. Gruber looked down at his commanders and wondered if he should give them the timeline that Creed had given him. It was impossible, he knew, and he feared that asking the impossible of them might break their fragile courage. The general wavered in a rare moment of indecision. He had promised, he reasoned, and so he should honour his word. He coughed to clear his voice.
Lord Castellan Creed needs the strength of the 17th Army at the Elysian Fields within nightfall, 2 days from now.
They could never do it. He felt that their morale would break as he asked this of them, but the reaction of the officers astonished him. A thrill went through the room. They were being asked to achieve the impossible. They smiled and laughed and turned to each other with wry comments. If that was what Creed asked of them, they would do it. Gruber took in a deep breath.
2 days, men of Cadia. 2 days and we shall be in the Elysian Fields.
There was a roar as the commanders rose to their feet.
2 days, they shouted back.
Gruber found himself swept up in the mood of the room.
To the Elysian Fields!
And then shouts of, for Creed, for Cadia, and Cadia stands. General Gruber breathed this moment in deep. He had spoken to his commanders, and they were inspired.